Shreveport City Council approved the Red River Expressway. Apparently, the city owned part of the land. That's why it had to go through the city council. Attorney for the project, William Bradford, joining us on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Aaron.
Thank you for talking with us this morning. Do we know a specific route yet on the expressway?
Well, we have not designated a final route, but we have a pretty close proposal. I'll be able to share that later on this morning. But it would go effectively connecting 3132 to Highway 271 in Bossier. So the plan is to send a boulevard carriageway between the neighborhoods of 12 Oaks and Esplanade on around to Highway 1 to fly that railroad track that's on Highway 1 and then take a toll bridge into Bossier Parish, landed in Bossier Parish, and follow it through to Highway 271 out near Parkway area.
Now, the usage of the road will be free for drivers, but there will be a toll once you get to the bridge. Do we know what the toll's going to be?
We've not set tolls yet. They'll be in line with the market across the country, but those are part of the details that are, now that we have these final legislative approvals, we can really start drilling into those revenue numbers.
Timetable for getting this whole roadway and the bridge built?
We move a little bit faster than the speed of government because, of course, this is a private venture, but we're looking at about a 2.5 to 3 year build time. So we expect to be underway Q1 of 2027 and be completed no later than 2030 time frame.
Okay, this is the same group, I believe, that did, if you're familiar with going to Gulf Shores, Alabama, they did that Foley Beach Express. Am I right?
That's right. That's correct. This is the same principal partner from the Foley Beach Express.
Did they make money on that Foley Beach Express? Or are they making money on it?
Yes. I mean, it was a successful business venture. I mean, so much so that he wanted to make it a family business. His sons and son-in-laws are all involved with this as business partners. And, he saw great value in doing it there, and he sees great value in doing it in Northwest Louisiana.
Now, I believe Alabama bought that bridge down there. I may be wrong about that. What will be ultimately, after 15, 20, 25 years, what will be the public involvement with this bridge and this highway? Is it going to stay private? Is that the goal?
Well, Mr. James has indicated, again, that this is a family business. His intent is to hold this project and to, generate revenue from the tolls, but also to make it a family business. He's been invested in Northwest Louisiana. He has, temporary residence here. He's done a good job of really becoming a member of the community. So I expect we'll see him here for the long haul.
And will there be, like, toll booths where there'll be people there, or is it all going to be done by cameras that you pay your toll because you get a picture thing in the mail?
I think you'll see a mixture. We recognize some customers are more familiar with the toll booth. It's going to be a toll plaza. We'll have some automated features as well, but we've not ruled out the possibility of having, manual toll takers there because we do understand that there's going to be a population of our customer base that, prefer that.
And I would assume I can get an annual sticker. If I'm going to regularly use that bridge, I can get an annual sticker for a certain fee?
Yeah, you'll have a toll pass option. That's correct.
Okay, you mentioned something yesterday during the city council meeting. You said some dirty words. you said Blue Line Solutions.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
One of the questions from the council is speed enforcement. We do recognize that our bridge will create new traffic, and we will do everything in our power to self-automate some of the traffic enforcement. But again, this is not a comparison to the school zones. This is a roadway with posted speed limits. There's not going to be a start stop. Here's the speed zone and move forward. And we'll also reach out and continue working with the County Parish Sheriff's Office and to the extent we need to, the Shreveport Police Department to help manage traffic.
Now, we spoke with a legislator who's not a fan of speed cameras, and he said they won't be enforceable because state laws provide speed cameras only in school zones. What do you say to that legality?
Well, that's something to be discussed, and if that's the case, if the statute's written, then we'll find other solutions that are available to us for speed enforcement management, right? I mean, we're here to be a part of the community. We're not going to, you know, argue the legalities of it. If it's something that doesn't work in this community, then we'll pick a different route. No pun intended, right? We want to be additive. This is something that connects Bossier and Shreveport, and you know, that answer needs to be developed a little more thoroughly, then we're happy to do that. No pride of authorship there.
The ingress and egress onto this highway, will I be able to kind of get on it at several spots, or will it be limited?
So unlike the proposed 3132 elevated four-lane controlled access corridor, this is not that. This is a boulevard carriageway. Part of the purpose of this roadway is to activate land that is, quite frankly, landlocked right now and allow for development along our route. And so we want to have as much access as possible, but to actually enter the toll road and or the roadways and the toll bridge, you will enter at 3132 and Florida Lucas, and you'll be able to exit once you get to Highway 1. There'll be some spurs. You know, we talked about connecting Arthur T and potentially giving some connections downriver to you know, the planned I-69 extension. So there are still some design elements that are being discussed, but we want to make this route as user friendly as possible, but also create as much economic lift and impact to our route as possible.
The residents of Esplanade and what's the name of the other subdivision down there? I'm getting 12 Oaks. They were very upset about how close this is coming to their homes. What concessions has the James Company made to ease those concerns for those residents?
You know, for every one resident that I heard was upset, probably heard from four or five that were very excited. You know, it's just unfortunate sometimes the people who want to speak in favor just don't come to city council. But I will tell you this, we've done everything that we possibly can as developers to make sure to protect the neighborhood. We've agreed to 35 mile an hour speed limits. There's going to be no truck traffic pursuant to the council's approval on the route between 12 Oaks and Esplanade. They will be able to pick it up later on in the route, but again, not impacting those neighborhoods. We are taking steps to build, you know, fencing and earthen berms and natural buffers to the route. Again, it's at grade. It's not elevated. Again, this was a proposed corridor for 3132, which is controlled access, elevated, interstate quality highway. You know, this is much more congruent with the neighborhood. And so we sent circulations around, mailers around to the neighborhood, to each neighbor in the neighborhood, explaining the steps we were taking to help ensure and protect the neighborhood and protect those property values as well. Again, this was always contemplated to be a route for an interstate.
And when you say fencing, that's kind of those soundproof walls that they have along 49, similar to that?
Well, no, I think you can ride some of the neighborhoods near and around LRB that have more of the decorative sound abatement fencing. We're talking that type, something congruent with the neighborhood, right? We understand people don't want to look out back and see a big metal wall. They want to see something that's aesthetically pleasing. And so Mr. James has, like I said, been here in the community, met and talked to neighbors, neighborhood associations, homeowners associations, to really develop a flavor for what the neighborhoods want to see. And that's what we want to do. Again, we've agreed to several concessions in order to help protect, you know, the surrounding neighborhoods and the integrity of the project.
Do you have the Corps of Engineers final okay for the bridge, building the bridge over the river?
So that process is still underway, but we are very far along in it. Our engineering team has done a great job of meeting with the teams from the Corps of Engineers, as well as other interested stakeholders and parties, the River Waterway Commission, the port, and making sure that we are, you know, we're building something that's functional and adds to the navigability of the, or at least does not impact navigability of the Red River. So we're in that process now, but we are fairly far along.
Are there any objections or hiccups that you see that you might have to overcome before you start turning dirt?
Well, you know, I think communication is going to remain the key priority for me and for our team, and making sure that, you know, the neighbors are kept abreast that are most impacted. But at this point, you know, this was a major hurdle milestone for us yesterday. This gave us that full connectivity of the route, right? So we don't have that tenth of a mile hanging out there where, you know, you can't build a road if you have one inch missing. So, you know, that has solved the problem. So we are well on our way. I think you'll see a much faster pace now. And, you know, we're looking forward to it. We look to bring this project to the community.
Silly question. Is the road going to be built first before the bridge? So maybe the road could actually open before the bridge is done?
From a timing standpoint, I think you'll see both, right? Of course, the revenue generator for the project is the road, is the toll bridge, And so Mr. James is going to focus on in constructing that bridge. That will be the most laborious part of the process. But I do think you will see concurrent construction of both roadways on the Bossier side, the Caddo side, and the bridge.
Along the road, on the route for the road, is there going to be room for development for like maybe retail and restaurants and that type of thing?
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of this project is to really open up and activate access to that southern Caddo, southern Bossier corridor along our route. So you know, I'll send a copy of the route to Aaron and you all will be able to see, you know, we're not going to have full access curb cuts everywhere, but you will have the ability to connect to the roadway as a user and as a retailer and as a commercial builder.
Does he own all the land now?
He owns all the right-of-way, right? We negotiated with several landowners to purchase a right-of-way sufficient enough to support the development of our project. So he is there.
Okay. We look forward to it. Thanks for being available to us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a great morning.
You bet.
Thank you, William. You too, sir. William Bradford, Mikey McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL.
Now breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Usually it's me that's...
I'm flighty today.
Oh, that's all right. You've got your mind on other things.
I do.
Okay, sorry.
Alan Jackson's joining us just after 7, by the way. With regard to the Uptown Bar controversy, he and I spoke late last night, and yes, he's still going to join us this morning. So he was there. He called the chief. He handed his phone while the chief was on it to the officer who was writing a summons. The officer spoke to the chief. That's straight from Alan Jackson's mouth.
Okay. But from what I've heard, I wasn't there.
Nope, me either.
And I've heard all the information basically from sitting in this chair. They had a permit to have the underage. They were having a graduation party thingy.
On their patio. Outdoor.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there was a permit. The kids were allowed to be there. It started storming.
By the way, none of these kids were under 18. They were all between 18 and 21. Just FYI. Sorry.
Okay. Well, that's also that's also relevant.
So they claim.
So it started storming and the kids came inside. I don't know anything about this club. I never even heard of it until this story. So I don't know. I don't know its history. But what my first impression is, this is not nefarious. This is not something that we should slam the book down on this guy. Based on the information that I have.
Well, we need to know.
Were maybe some poor decisions made?
Sure.
Okay.
Now, their adamant claim that the kids weren't drinking. We need to see the video. Because I know as a youngster myself, if I was given a wristband and I was told to keep that wristband on because you can't drink because of that wristband, I wonder if any young people find a way to get the wristband off.
Take that wristband off.
Yeah.
Ruben and I would not have taken that wristband off when we were 18.
Never, right?
I would have honored that, yes.
And so we're going to need, I mean, ultimately they're going to need to show video from the inside the club. Yeah. Were any of the kids drinking? Did we have proof? What was the chief's involvement? Did he use the words, let it go, like they're now portraying? You know, just let it go.
This is kind of a tempest in a teacup.
Well,
in my opinion, honestly,
but was this business owner treated the way other business owners would have been treated?
But see, if other business owners go, well, I would have been arrested. You can't make that argument. You cannot argue on a speculation or a woulda, coulda, shoulda.
You can't make that argument. You can't say, well, you would have done this. You don't know.
Yeah.
You can, that is not a legitimate argument in my book.
Mm-hmm. We're past the time. We'll talk about this a lot this morning.
101.7 FM, 710 KEEL, Mike and McCarty.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Governor Landry wants a pay raise for Louisiana teachers. Jordan Thomas responds coming up just after the local news. She's with Red River United here in Caddo Parish. 101.7 FM, 710KEEL.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
FM, 710 KEEL, Mike and McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline with Red River United. Jordan Thomas joining us. Jordan, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for jumping on with us. So were you excited about Governor Landry's discussion on a permanent teacher pay raise, or a little apprehensive? What are you thinking?
Well, you know, I'm always just a little bit apprehensive because you believe it when you see it kind of thing, because, you know, we've been kind of, you know, pulled around a little bit, teachers and school employees have, but we're definitely excited about it. We think, you know, the MFP, which is historically how our pay raises are funded, is a smart choice. And to have a committee coming together to find that seems like, you know, that we should be successful in that.
That was something that raised my eyebrow when I heard him say they're setting up a committee to reevaluate the MFP and how the money is doled out. It made me think that fewer dollars might actually be flowing to local school systems. Is that a concern for you?
Well, it is a concern, only because, you know, if we know we're not getting new monies and we're just basically, you know, I kind of look at it as my own personal budget. And if I'm saying, well, I can cut out the Starbucks, or I can, you know, not have Netflix or whatever, you know, somewhere you're making a concession. So there, it quite possibly could be something like that. You know, we don't know yet. We're, you know, as this thing, you know, kind of moves along and flushes out, you know, we'll be, you know, anticipating, you know, what it will be. But, you know, we know with the Amendment 3 that didn't pass because, you know, resoundingly, the public and teachers and school employees, retirees said, you know, they didn't want to compromise those protected funds, you know, for that pay raise previously. So it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out.
Well, and he said it probably won't happen this year. There's not enough time to get it worked into the budget, but that they probably will include a stipend again this year.
Yeah, I saw that as well. And, you know, if you think about it, we've had those stipends, I believe, for the last 3 years. And, you know, regardless if they were one time or not, people have come to count on those, you know, the 2000 for certified, 1000 for classified employees. So if, you know, if you don't have that stipend, I mean, you are taking a pay cut, you know, I mean, that's the reality of that, because you have adjusted to, you know, counting on that money. So, you know, at least if we have that, that's better than nothing. But again, I mean, our ultimate goal is to have that permanent pay raise that everyone can count on, that shows people that, you know, you value them. It shows people that, you know, you want them to stay in that profession, because as you all know, I mean, there's a shortage everywhere nationally, but, you know, in our state as well.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what would you like to see as far as a permanent pay raise implemented?
You know, it's an interesting thing, because, you know, when you think about each individual school district gets to have their own salary schedule, but this money is going to be a state pay raise, you know. So when you start looking at percentages, that's kind of different, because, you know, we're in, you know, Red River Parish, where they make, you know, they have the high, one of the highest, you know, versus some of our lower parishes. You know, I couldn't say an exact amount. You know, I know we're close to about $5,000 below the Southern regional average on average. You know, so I think that's a good place to start. You know, we haven't had a permanent raise since 2019. And before that, you know, we had gone a while as well. So we've just slowly fallen behind. So, you know, it's important that it's significant enough to, you know, attract people to the profession, but also retain people, because that's just as important as recruiting those folks.
I find something interesting, Jordan Thomas, with Red River United. I find that for years and years, I was 48th, 49th, 47th in reading and math and all that. And now we're in the 30s. And you would think, as we're making improvements in education, the people that are responsible for that, teachers, might be the ones rewarded. but we haven't done that. Should we maybe more attach how our kids are performing to how much we pay our teachers? Should there be a closer link to that?
Well, you know, that is the song as old as time. And you know, used to when we had the state testing, and, you know, I don't know if you all remember, but there used to be a time when students had to pass the state test in fourth grade and eighth grade. And, you know, then they moved on from that because we were retaining too many students. And so now the students take those state tests, a LEAP or whatever, and that's going to result in a school's performance score. That's also if a teacher teaches a subject that's a state test. That's part of what's a value added, their VAM score. So we already evaluate teachers in schools on these methods of using these state assessments, you know. So that component is already there. I have never been a fan of merit pay. I mean, I've seen it my own self as a teacher. It all depends on the population of your students. I've never been crazy about that. I mean, listen, I'm a former college softball player. I'm highly competitive, and so I always felt that way. But I think sometimes it can make it to where the school doesn't seem as collaborative, and it's so important when you're a teacher to have those people that you can lean on, that you can work together. And I'm not saying that's not the answer to have some component of that, but I just think that overall, you know, there's so many factors that teachers have no control over, you know, student absenteeism, you know, the population, the socioeconomics, that I don't necessarily think that that's the best way to go is to do it merit-based. But I do think what you said, recognizing the fact that we've had all this growth, is really important. You know, where these, our public schools are what keeps our communities together. It's what keeps our communities safe. You know, where we see people who are highly educated, we see safer, cleaner streets. We see things that, you know, are just better for everybody in general.
And I understand what you're saying about the merit-based pay because I know certain jobs, when your performance is dependent on somebody upstream of you, and
correct,
and you have to, you can't do your job if they're not doing their job. And I do understand that is very frustrating. I've been in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think about the time, even whenever I was teaching at Walnut Hill, and I was teaching sixth grade English language arts, and there are teachers obviously teaching eighth grade. Well, in eighth grade, they had to pass the LEAP, and in sixth grade, they didn't. So basically, I'm taking these state tests, you know, that I've worked hard all year long, you know, giving to these students and saying, like, you know, to an 11 and 12 year old, please, please do well on this test because this, you know, is my evaluation. That's a scary thought. Not that I didn't prepare them, but it's still scary to think about putting your fate in the hands of a 12 year old.
As they reevaluate the minimum foundation program and how it's funded, right now the money follows the child. So if the child leaves to go to a charter school or a private school, the money follows. They need to take another look at that.
Well, I definitely think so. I think our public school, our public dollars should stay with our public schools. I mean, that's a whole other argument, really, you know. But it is scary when you start thinking about dwindling that down and then what's left. You know, what's left for those students? And we know that the cost of educating kids just gets more expensive every year when you look at technology and all the things that are required in classrooms. So, you know, yeah, that's what we've, as from the union perspective, we've always argued that, you know, the public monies should stay in our public schools. You know, if you want the choice to send your kids other places, you know, that's gets it to be a different, you know, a different kind of mindset.
Because as the governor said yesterday, we've lost 100,000 kids over the past 30 to 40 years, I guess. And many of them are in private schools, charter schools, or homeschooled, right?
That's right. We have seen a lot of that, and it's one of the things where, you know, I wish I was smart enough to figure all that out about what happens in public schools. But I will say, I always think of a public school as welcoming to everyone. I think of a public school as, you know, no matter if you have an exceptionality, whether, you know, you need, you know, special accommodations, that's what public schools are always going to do. We're going to accept one and all, and we're going to do our best to educate you and make sure that you have everything that you can to thrive. And so, you know, I will always be a huge proponent of that.
Well, we know the lawmakers are discussing that to putting it in the budget, so we'll have to wait and see what happens.
That is right. We'll wait and see. And you know, we've got the teachers and school employees, we've kind of become accustomed to this, but we're going to trust in these politicians that we've elected, and hopefully they'll find a way to make this work out for us.
What did you just say? Trust in these politicians? Did you just say that?
Hey,
that's like trusting in a 12-year-old, isn't it?
Hey, I'm being cautiously optimistic, okay?
All right, gotcha. Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, y'all. Okay.
Bye. Jordan Thomas, Red River United. Kim McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Our water's back now, correct? We're good?
Well, I made coffee, so I hope we're good.
We're still under a boil advisory.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I didn't boil that water when I made
Doesn't
this coffee.
Doesn't the coffee machine boil it?
It's got a filter. It's one of those big things that you just push a button and it runs through the machine. Yeah, you don't pour water or anything out of the faucet. Well, it's tied into the water line.
Okay.
So I'm hoping there's some type of filtration system on it.
Let's hope so. Well, what had happened was...
I've been drinking it for years, so...
What had happened was you came in here about 8 o'clock yesterday and you said, hey,
yeah,
we don't have any water.
There's no water.
There's no water. And I said, what? And you said, yeah, the whole building. So I, text the bosses and have we paid our water bill? Are we good? And yeah, we're good. We paid the bill. And so I texted, who I am, I texted the mayor and the right. Brandon Snead in the water department.
The director of water and sewerage.
And I said, hey, we got snow water out here. And I think that was the first they heard of it. They're checking on it. I texted Ursula Bowman, councilwoman who represents the area. I said, hey, are you getting complaints? Because we got snow water out here. And I don't think I said we got snow water out here, but close. And she said, thanks for letting her know. She was going to check it out. Turns out there was a SWEPCO power outage at the water distribution sites, and it knocked out power to this whole western side of Shreveport.
Okay. So it wasn't the city's fault.
No, it was a SWEPCO power outage. But here's the problem. You know, we've had these generators on back order that we want at these sites.
Right.
So that if there is a power outage, the generator kicks in and we still have water service. So that generator's not here yet and it's not been installed yet. So that was the problem. But I went up and down Pines Road yesterday to check at the lunch hour and they couldn't serve their fountain drinks because they had no water.
Mm-hmm.
So they were only being able to serve bottle drinks and,
Gosh,
they charge an arm and a leg for those,
been through that.
They got it back, got the power back up, but then they had to issue a boil advisory because of the water flowage. They need to make sure the pipes are clean and all that good stuff. Cause once you shut the system down, it's got to flush through the pipes until the Department of Health gives you the green light. So anyway, that's what happened.
But it's just a boil advisory.
Right.
It's not a boil order.
It is not. And it's not the whole city.
There's a difference.
It's the Western District, and that's kind of out by the Pines Road corridor area. So,
and it's like something got in the water and they got to clean it. It just went down for a little while.
Right.
Probably fine. I'm not telling you not to boil if you're more comfortable doing that, but.
Did you sip that coffee yet before I sip it?
I'm on my second.
Okay, that's
I'm
right.
on my first refill. Are you kidding?
And you haven't had tummy bubbles or anything yet, so I'm good, yeah. I did have an incident the other day, by the way. I was out at a local business who shall remain nameless along Uri Drive, and I order water all the time, and I got the water to the table, and the friend of mine that was with me also ordered water. We both took a sip, and it tasted muddy.
Really?
It tasted very muddy. And so guess what McCarty does? I texted Brandon Snead. I said, hey, here's where I am.
Aaron.
Water tastes muddy. He goes, well, we're headed that way. We're going to go check it out and see what's going on.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing,
honestly. Really are. They're very responsive.
In my neighborhood, there was a little geyser coming up on the corner one day. This is months and months and months ago. And I took a picture and I said, don't know if you're aware of this. And he went, well, thank you. And I'm telling you, Aaron, 30 minutes later, there was a crew and a truck out there.
They're out there getting
digging it up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're on it.
They absolutely are, no doubt.
Coming up after the news, top of the hour, City Councilman Alan Jackson going to be joining us. This is kind of, this has just gotten just weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird.
And look, this is not the first time a city councilman has called a city official for help on something. I promise you.
And, underage kids at a bar, but it's really not there at a bar. There have been another event. We'll talk mm-hmm. about that after the news. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. Mike and McCarty. I don't even know what to think about this. Alan Jackson, Shreveport City Councilman on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. First of all, Alan, good morning. Thanks for talking with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
So let's go back to early Sunday morning. It's Saturday night. About 1 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, Uptown Bar in downtown Shreveport.
Not downtown, right?
Well, it's downtown.
Okay.
It's a little...
South. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Down Marshall Street. This was a graduation party? Is that what was... That's why there were 18 to 21-year-olds there?
A college graduation party for his son, yes.
Okay.
So the young people there
of which he had a permit.
He did have a permit. He followed the process.
Talking about the owner of the club.
Owner of the club received the permit. Everybody there was ID'd and given a wristband to identify those that were under the age of 21.
No one was under the age of 18, correct?
No one that I'm aware of. I believe everybody was considered an adult between 18 and 20 as far as underage.
Now,
these were college students. There were a lot of college students, a lot of his friends, a lot of people that he attended college with came down to celebrate with him for his graduation.
But then allegedly somebody called the police and said there are underage kids in this bar. Is that what happened?
Yes. So police came in. They was walking around with flashlights. The DJ asked, who are y'all looking for? Because they were a little aggressive. The DJ kept repeating, who are y'all looking for? I walked up to one of the officers. I identified who I was. And he said that we received a call saying there were underage people in this establishment. I said, okay. I said, the owner is in the back inside the food truck. He has a food truck inside the patio. And so I escorted the officers to the owner, and then I allowed them to talk, and I kind of stepped back and kind of gave them their space. Once they finished talking, the owner instructed the DJ to tell everybody who had a yellow gold bracelet that they had to leave. And so he complied. He did exactly what the officer instructed him to do. And then all of the yellow bracelet people were escorted out through the courtyard and then off of the premises.
And this was at around 1 o'clock in the morning?
This was about 1 o'clock in the morning.
So correct. They had been there all night then since earlier, because the club didn't open until 10 p.m. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
So they had been there all night then.
And their party was in the patio area.
Their party was in the patio area, correct.
And it started raining, and that's why they came in. Is that accurate?
That's why they came in. And also, their event started well before 10 o'clock. They just, once 10 o'clock came, they didn't leave. I don't know if he was aware that they didn't leave. His normal club does not open up until 10 o'clock. It's a 10 to 2 club. So I'm not sure if he wasn't aware that they didn't leave, but they just remained on the premises inside. When I arrived maybe around midnight. I was even unaware that there was a previous event. I was unaware that there were underage people at the time until the police arrived.
Was there alcohol out on the patio?
No. To my knowledge, nobody under the age was served alcohol. Hence, that's why they was giving a separate wristband. All of the bartenders understood what was going on. And so no bartenders, to my knowledge, served anybody that was under the age of 21.
Let's get to the problem here. Okay. You saw the officer writing a summons is what you told me yesterday, and I wrote it down. I saw the officer writing a summons. I asked if he had to write a summons. I asked if he could give a warning. I then asked if I could loop the chief in, and that's when you called Chief Smith, correct?
Correct. Everything was correct. I asked the officer, was it okay for me to call Chief Smith? And I want to say that small detail. I'm the type of person that I'm never going to intervene or tell any body of authority what to do or how to do their job. So I made it clear that I asked the officer, I said, is it okay that we reach out to Chief Smith? And he said, yeah, go ahead. And so then I did call Chief Smith. Now, honestly, Aaron, I didn't expect Chief to answer. By this time, it's closer to 1:30 in the morning. So I did not expect Chief to answer. I expected him to be nice and tidy in his bed sleeping. But he didn't answer the phone. When he answered the phone, of course, you know, I'm pretty sure my number is saved in his phone, but I still identified who I was to him. And I said, hey, Chief, we have a situation. I'm going to let the officer on the scene kind of explain to what's going on. Because I knew they had more in-depth knowledge than what I had. And so I didn't want Chief just taking it from me. I wanted him to hear directly from the officer. So I passed my phone to the officer and I allowed them to talk.
Okay, let me interrupt you right there. Because
to talk to the chief.
The police department has put out a statement saying the chief did not talk to the officer. You handed your phone to the officer. The chief was on the other end of the line, right?
That's correct.
So their statement is incorrect.
I have not seen their statement, so okay. I can't speak for that.
But do you know what the chief said to the officer?
I do not.
So the quotes of him saying, let it go, don't worry about it, you don't know anything about that?
No, because the chief was not on speakerphone, so the officer was talking to him directly. From my understanding, the officer was explaining to him what was going on.
And what happened after that? Did they issue a summons? Did they issue a warning? What happened?
After that, the officer indicated that they were going to issue a warning.
And that's what happened?
That's what happened.
A written warning?
I don't know if it was written or verbal. I didn't see any officers walk back into the building. I'm not sure who reached out to the bar owner, Mr. Williams. Let me say this also, too. Mr. Williams did not ask me to. I was literally getting ready to leave, and I saw this taking place. And so I asked on my own. Mr. Williams was not standing beside me. He was in another part of the venue, again, back on the patio, back into the food truck. At the time, he had no idea any of this was going on.
Why did you get involved, Alan? Why did you interject yourself?
Great question. And I've been getting this question a lot. My position as a council person, if I'm able to help, I believe that's part of my job.
Help somebody who might be breaking the law?
Well, honestly, Aaron, I was there. I felt like, and I know Ryan Williams, I felt like he's a good business person. I didn't feel like he did anything malicious. Honestly and transparent, I didn't know there was another event. I didn't know that he even had a permit. But reading comments on Facebook, these underage people did not sneak in. Nobody did not forget to check ID. It wasn't that he wasn't running his business well. This was an advertised event. He wanted those individuals there. He invited those individuals there. And they were wristbands. They were giving proper wristbands. I've experienced places in other parts of the country where 18 to 20 are allowed to party with 21 and up because they're big folk. They have laws that said this is a college town. And so I'm familiar with that. I felt like this was a one-time thing. I felt like this was because his son was graduating. This was not a routine thing. So given the circumstances, being on the scene at the time, and I'm saying I know Ryan. The officers there may not know him. They may not know his character. And so I wanted to let them know that, hey, this is a good guy. This is not something that happens. To my knowledge, his establishment has never been in trouble before as far as breaking or violating the law. And so I wanted to offer that. I wanted to ask for any type of courtesy or consideration. But I still respect the officer's decision. I still allow them to say, hey, we will consider that or not consider that. That's all I was asking.
Shreveport City Councilman Alan Jackson, looking back on it now, do you think maybe I could have handled this differently? Do you regret calling the chief and getting him involved?
I would say yes, because in my politics, I'm a big boy. I can always handle any decisions that I make. I'm still supportive of the decision that I made. But I do not like getting other people involved. I do not like other people having to answer for any situation that I put them in. So I do apologize for putting Chief in a tight squeeze. In retrospect, I would have allowed just things just to kind of play out and then just, you know, deal with them at a later date. I think that would have been the best move in retrospect. But in the moment, I walked up to the officer and I asked them to consider, you know, the facts. I asked them I didn't ask them, but I was explaining who Ryan Williams is. And I believe that this is a one-time thing. I didn't feel like this would warrant a summons at this particular moment. Because this bar does not have a habit of allowing underage people in it. It was a special event to honor his son's graduation.
Alan Jackson, Shreveport City Councilman, thank you for being candid with us. We sure appreciate it. There's a little discrepancy in your story and the chief's story, which we need to investigate. We appreciate you telling your side of the story, and thanks for being candid.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Oh, Aaron.
It's just getting messy now.
Is it, though?
Yeah, to me it is. I don't like when government people lie to me. It makes me crazy. Oh, you're covering up something, and now someone's lying. Okay. Now we know I'm going to quote Chris Bordelon, the spokesman for the Shreveport Police Department. Chief Smith, and this is on KTBS, Chief Smith actually did not speak with the officers on the scene. He did, in fact, speak to a city council member that was present at that location. And the information at that point in time was forwarded to all of the information to our alcohol beverage ordinance office. Alan Jackson, the city councilman, just told us he called the chief 1:15, 1:20 in the morning and handed the phone with the chief on it to the officer on the scene who was writing a summons. They both can't be right. One of them is lying.
Okay, lying is a strong word.
One of them is not telling the truth. Is that better?
I don't know. I just... saying.
If they were your children, what would you say to them? One of you is not being upfront. One of you is lying.
Okay.
And why? Let's say the chief's lying or Chris Bordelon's lying. Why? If Alan Jackson's lying, why? This is what's wrong with government. We don't trust you because you're trying to wiggle yourself out of a problem, so you try to lie yourself out of it. And now you're deeper in it.
Downtown business owner Tim Huck is going to join us after the news bottom of the hour.
Where's the tequila?
101.7. It's at the Uptown Bar. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
No.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
You're loving this.
Well, let me read what I got from the police department because...
And this is recent. Most...
Yes. Because when I say the police spokesman said the chief didn't speak to the officers on the scene, Alan Jackson says he got the chief on the phone and he handed his phone to the officer on the scene to speak to the chief. Chris Bordelon with the police department says that's a misquote on KTBS. KTBS, I would like your audio, please. He says that's a misquote. The chief did not speak to the one who wrote the comment in the call, to which I replied, which one did he speak to and what did he tell them? What did the chief tell them? I'm waiting on their response to that, and I haven't heard. The problem is if you try to hide things and you try to cover up and you try to not be reveal everything, the story gets bigger. If you just say, hey, yeah, I told him to let it go or whatever it was, whatever his words were, and, you know, we'll deal with it later and figure it out the next morning. This isn't a story today.
I'm proud of my children. My children were raised, if you mess up, just fess up.
Yes.
Because you make it 10 times worse if you try to cover it up.
Or wiggle the truth. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then it becomes worse, and then there's the appearance of even worse.
Yes. And then you have other...
And I'm not saying anybody's trying to cover up. I'm just saying this wouldn't be a story.
Right. If you just said, I talked to the officer. I understood the situation, and I was trying to give the owner a break. He's been a good business owner. Blah, blah, blah. We're done.
Even though apparently there was a shooting there?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm not going to get into that.
Cinco de Mayo, a 19-year-old was shot at that location?
You better make sure you got that right. I don't know that.
I'm quoting that on this news story at KTBS.
Okay. All right. I'm just saying. Well, now you have other bar owners, including Tim Huck, who says, would he have been treated the same? He says, not a chance.
Well, we'll ask him when we get back. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Shreveport business owner Tim Huck joining us. Tim, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for jumping on with us.
You own nightclubs. You know the rules. You know the laws. You and I have spoken. You think this nightclub owner was given special treatment. Explain why.
Without a doubt, he was given special treatment. But we're going to start out with, people keep talking about a permit. There is no such permit that allows a club, a bar, to have under 21 in their establishment ever for any reason whatsoever.
What about a permit for the patio area that he has?
The patio area is still on their property. They still have a liquor license that is a bar license, not a restaurant license.
So underage can't even be on that patio with a permit?
There is no permit in the city of Shreveport currently that allows under 21 to be on that establishment.
So if they show me a permit, it would be something they shouldn't have done.
No, they can show you a special events permit. The permit would allow them to have enhanced sound system on the patio. The permit would not allow under the age of 21 to be on the patio or on the premises at all. So there's no permit that exists in the city of Shreveport. I can't go get a permit to allow underage in my establishment, even if I'm closed. If I take every bit of liquor out of my building, I still can't have a permit to have someone under the age of 21 in there because it doesn't exist in the city of Shreveport.
So they shouldn't have been there at all.
They should have never been there at all in the first place. Secondly, if they would have walked in one of my establishments, there's no way the chief says give him a warning. The chief says take him to jail. I would be on the cover of the paper as other business owners in town have had happen to them.
Now, wait, the business owner would be arrested, not just cited?
Absolutely. 75 underage people, 75 violations of the law, 80 violations of the law. Absolutely, they'd have been arrested.
Why do you think that didn't happen here?
It has a lot to do with race. What to do with privilege? Selective enforcing?
Why?
Again, I just pointed that out. It's going to have to do with the race. If you look at another business owner who had something very similar, now we can say they were drinking and they weren't drinking. The officers never did a full investigation to find out if the people were drinking or not drinking. However, fortunately, they're still capable of it. One is the ticket should have been a one account for each person under the age of 21 in the establishment. So if there were 75 people, it should have been 75 counts. Two is they should have checked to see if any of them were drinking, because it should have been also a contributing to delinquency of underage charge. But they can still go pull all the video. Uptown Lounge is required to keep video for 30 days and provide it to law enforcement at any time. There's body camera footage of the underage leaving the establishment during the incident. So they can still pull video and actually do a full investigation, really do their job. If they will or not, it's another story. But had this never broke a mama bear, then you wouldn't even be talking about it today, and there would have never been a citation written.
If they'd written a citation the morning of, it wouldn't be a story either. The bar was issued a citation, we move on.
It's a non-issue. I mean, you know, is something wrong? Absolutely. Did something happen? Absolutely. Would he have the opportunity to fix that and not have those problems again? Absolutely. But yeah, if they issue a citation, unfortunately, no one in this industry has not broken that rule, whether it be intentional or unintentional. But you know, anyone else gets a citation and gets their day in court.
You know, 18 to 21 year olds, we've been there. If I'm in a club and I have a yellow wristband that says I'm not supposed to drink, I might find a way to get that wristband off. Do you feel pretty confident that some of those underage people might have been drinking?
I believe
you're asking
that,
for speculation.
I will agree that would definitely be speculation, so I'll give you that. However, there's a reason why. And look, I'm okay with Alan mentioned, you know, in other cities and other markets, you can put on a wristband, and he's correct. He's 100% correct. So, Alan, you are a legislator. You make law, change the law.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you're a legislator. You make law. You should at least know the law that is on the books. All these people talking about a special events permit doesn't allow him to have under 21 in his establishment. And you would think that the chief of police who enforces the law and Alan Jackson, who makes law, would actually know the law.
I'm looking at the special events permit now, and it doesn't say anything about age. That I'm looking at it on the fly, but I'll have to look at it in more detail. But it just says 300 people would be allowed and the hours and all that sort of thing. But you're telling me that this special event permit does not allow for anyone under 21.
No, if you have a special events permit in the Festival Plaza, you can have all ages in there. A special events permit does not allow under 21 to be in a bar, in a nightclub, in an establishment that's primary source of income is alcohol. I get a special events permit for XYZ, you know, 200 Lake Street, and throw a party there with a special events permit, and all ages can be there. If you have a liquor license, your bar, you can only have 21 and up in there.
Interesting.
The special events permit strictly allows him to have an enhanced sound system outside because he doesn't have a sound permit after that whole noise ordinance deal that I've been on the station about many times.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we remember the noise ordinance.
Boy, no
yes.
Kidding.
Well, that's what the special events permit circumvents, is the noise ordinance for that time frame.
Are they still hiding things right now? Or do you think the police department is still hiding things right now?
Well, again, you're asking about speculation.
Well, that's what I do.
Well, I'm not asking, you're not asking about speculation, because we already know for sure that they're hiding. They're mentioning a special events permit that would not allow for what happened to happen. They're mentioning that they went and wrote tickets, that they called Vice right away. The tickets were wrote a couple of days later after the story was broke. And I'm going to still bet that they wrote one citation for one count when they should have been an account for every single person that was underage in there.
Tim Huck, appreciate your time.
Hey, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tim. We'll talk to you soon. Coming up after the break, we got a statement from the Shreveport Police Department spokesman that we're going to read you that when we get back. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Now breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
All right, we got a statement from Shreveport Police spokesperson Corporal Chris Bordelon. And this is quite an extensive statement.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if we can do this real quickly. So Alan called Chief Smith the other night to explain what was going on at the scene. At one point, he even handed the phone to the sergeant who was on scene so Chief could get a direct understanding of the situation. The sergeant explained the circumstances and advised that officers were in the process of clearing the juveniles from the property while also trying to determine exactly what violation had occurred due to the permitted event. And it continues. That is not something most patrol officers commonly deal with. Chief Smith advised that the matter would be forwarded to the Alcohol and Beverage Ordinance Office. That's the ABO office, because that is the unit specifically trained and experienced in handling permit issues and alcohol-related ordinances. This is not an uncommon process. The ABO officers are the individuals who are well-versed in permits, alcohol laws, and city ordinances. In the overwhelming majority of these cases, they are the ones who ultimately issue citations, because they are also the ones who would later testify in court regarding those violations.
Okay.
It is no different than a sex crime investigator handling sex crimes cases or a violent crimes investigator handling violent crime investigations. Most patrol officers simply are not extensively trained in ABO laws and ordinances, because those matters are highly specialized.
And let me finish the last paragraph. Many of you have known Chief Smith for years,
mm-hmm.
and understand that he is not the type of person to cut corners or make rush judgments. He approaches situations methodically and carefully, and this situation was handled exactly the way it was supposed to be handled. Okay. A, I don't think you call the police chief at 1:15 in the morning.
No.
Alan Jackson says if he had it to do over again, he wouldn't have done that. B, I think the officer should have been instructed, do your job. If you think a citation should be written now,
right.
write it now.
Right. I agree.
If that's what you would have done at any other business, write it now. So we'll see. We'll see. I just... It got blown up so big because folks weren't candid
yes.
from the start. And that's what happens when you're not candid from the start. Stories get bigger and bigger, and the movie Frozen gets involved, and then you're Elsa. The chief is now Elsa. And he said, let it go.
Oh, Lord.
So, I mean, it just... That's part of the problem. That's part of why we don't trust government.
Jerry said on the message board, Mike, Sir Walter Scott stated it best. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive.
Hmm.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Aaron, when I first heard this, I thought this is a joke. This is AI. This is a joke. Well, it ain't.
This blew me away.
It's called, there's an actual initiative petition 28, IP 28 in Oregon, proposing to ban hunting and fishing, as well as trapping and livestock slaughter.
You are lying.
Making intentionally injuring or killing any non-human animal a criminal offense.
What?
Narrow exceptions for self-defense when that deer starts jumping on you. then you can kill it. If that deer pulls a knife on you, then you can elevate your level of...
Or that goose charges you from the duck pond?
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or veterinary care. On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, co-host of Hooking Up and Trekking Down, Steve Graff joining us. Steve, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How y'all doing this morning?
Well, this is not true. This cannot be true.
They've organized a hunt. They've got 120,000 signatures in Oregon.
And they don't need but a few more, supposedly, to reach the level they need for it to be put on the ballot in November for the public to vote on this.
Well, apparently they need roughly 117,000 required to get the measure onto the ballot, and they've got 120.
Yeah, see that? Of course, I don't know. And you left one out, pest control. They want to eliminate pest control.
Oh, I can't kill roaches in my house?
No, that's right. Those roaches have a right to live.
I hope they pass this. I do. I hope they pass it.
I'm telling you, I knew people out there were a little bit different, but I just didn't know that many people were out there that were different.
Steve, I have to say, if they pass this, if this were to pass, they don't need to eat any of these foods anymore. They all need to say, okay, we're not going to eat any of these. We're not going to import fish. We're not going to bring any of the beef in from anywhere. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, and we all know that's not true because they got to eat. I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, what you going to do?
Eat grass?
Everybody going to be vegetarians out there? I mean, what's the deal? I don't know. Nothing shocks me anymore. And it's funny y'all should bring this up this morning because next week on Hooking Up and Tracking Down, I've got Travis Thompson coming on from Florida. He's a big advocate for hunting and fishing. And some things are being brought up in Florida, believe it or not.
No.
Yes.
No. Florida is a conservative state.
Yeah, that's my concern, is that how much is this going to spread? You know, now, I know it's different up there in the Northwest. They just think a little differently up there, but then the heart and soul, I think a lot of their economy is hunting and fishing. I don't know. I mean, how many outfitters are they going to run out of business? And I don't even know. Well, I'm almost at a loss of words.
One of their stations is reporting that it has sparked an intense debate, and hunting organizations, ranchers, and restaurant owners are saying this is going to devastate the rural and coastal economies. You can't go fish. You can't, like Aaron said, you can't go get lobster anymore.
Mm.
You can't. Those are entire industries that are going to be just decimated.
Yes, and I can't believe that there's 120,000 people that think that's okay. But
I can.
Either that or they don't know what they signed on for. That's what I'm wondering. How did they approach these people that got
these
signatures?
Cruel to animals.
What did they tell them? What were they told that this is really about? Because I'm telling you, I just find it hard to believe 120,000 people want to eliminate all those industries from their region.
Hunting and fishing aside, if you do away with pest control, good luck growing anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like your tofu won't grow.
Yeah, your soybeans, nothing will grow. The bugs will eat it.
Tofu won't grow. New York City, the rats will take over.
Right.
And you can't kill them.
Good luck with that. So what you going to do?
Now, Oregon can't control the coast, and they can't control what you do out in the ocean. So I can go out in the ocean, and I can fish, and I can crab and do whatever I do in the ocean, but it's going to be you're not going to be able to bring it back to Oregon. I'm going to have to bring it somewhere else.
That would be my question too. What do I do with my catch when I bring them in? And again, the fishing industry is massive up there.
$500 million in Oregon is the fishing industry.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I don't know. These people need to find a life. They need to find something to do. Go grow pumpkins or whatever you're going to do up there, but they need to find something else to do.
And it's going to go even further. I guarantee you they're going to make everybody be fruitarianists.
Fruitarianists.
That means you can only eat fruit that's fallen from the tree.
Oh, you can't pick it.
You can't go pick the fruit.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's actually a thing. Fallen fruit.
Here's where I think this is going to lead to. Okay. Let's say this passes. well, y'all don't need your guns or your bows. Y'all need to turn all that stuff in. We need to get your guns and stuff, too.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
See,
oh, yeah.
There you go.
Mm. Yeah.
I thought this was a lie, Steve. I really did.
One thing leads to another.
Oh. I kind of hope it passes. I'm kind of like Mike. Let's see what they do when it passes.
And I said this about when Mondani was running for mayor. I hope they elect him. I hope New York elects him. And they did.
Yeah, they go.
Now look what he's saying. They're going to start taking over private property if it's not being maintained the way they think it should be maintained. Well, there you go.
Well, we got to a couple more years. That deal will play out, and New Yorkers will figure it out.
You hope.
I think they already have figured it out. When they're already asking, where's my free food and where's my free whatever?
Mm-hmm.
They're already kind of up in arms. What happened to your promise of free groceries? Well, it's just a matter of time. It'll play itself out. Mm-hmm. And they'll wise up in New York.
I'm wondering how they sold this. How they sold this to people that's going to decimate industries. But then you're talking about, like Aaron made a great point earlier, no more food processing, no more meat processing plants. Now you're going to have to import all of your meat.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be in the grocery store going, why is my hamburger meat $15 a pound?
Yep.
Yeah, import fee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all going to turn to tofu. The land of fruits and nuts, Steve.
Well, they probably
man.
Are.
Yes, amen. Mm. And like I said, I don't know. Little People, Big World, I don't know if y'all ever watched that show, Little People, Big World, but it was in Oregon. And they think a little differently up there.
I don't know. Is that about midgets?
You're not allowed to say that word anymore.
What?
That's right, little people.
Little people. Little people.
Oh, okay.
And they had a farm. They raised pumpkins. It was a neat little deal. These family had created their own little pumpkin farm. People come buy pumpkins in the fall, and they have a pumpkin festival, and it was a big deal. But I hope they can grow a bunch of pumpkins, because then people are going to be eating something besides meat.
Then it's going to be cruel to the pumpkins if you have to cut them off the vine.
And don't make a jack-o'-lantern out of one of them. Oh, that'd be a thing.
Oh, they're screaming. Oh, the pumpkins are screaming when you cut into them.
Yeah. Holy cow. Well, Steve, thanks for jumping on with us. We appreciate it, my friend.
Hey, no problem. Y'all do a great job. Enjoy y'all every morning.
Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Graff hooking up, tracking down on KWKH every Wednesday. They've got a great producer on that show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
By the way.
Yeah. Gertie's a real jerk.
And I heard his producer started getting ads on his phone for deer urine.
He did. Yeah, he did.
Just sitting in the room.
Yep.
Sitting in the room. Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
I love it.
Coming up, if you missed our conversation with City Councilman Alan Jackson regarding the Uptown Bar controversy, we will replay that in about 20 minutes.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with more McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, the state that has Portland, it's not a surprise.
I say they just have tofu, brownies, and weed. And that's what they live on.
One of our messages says they're all high in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. They need a little protein. How do we throw protein in there?
Oh,
some bean brownies.
Aaron.
Black bean brownies and weed. There we go. They're good. Oh,
it's
man.
It's a coastal state. Up in the northwest,
mm-hmm.
There's lobster.
Yeah, if you're just joining us,
there's fishing.
They are putting something on the ballot that would prohibit.
It's initiative
hunting, fishing.
It's Initiative Petition 28, known as the Peace Act, and it would criminalize hunting, fishing, trapping, and traditional livestock slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
The measure is currently working to qualify for the November ballot.
Pest control would be illegal, too.
That's what Ruben said. They were talking about this on Hooking Up, Tracking Down yesterday and said, pest control. You can't kill roaches or spiders in your home.
What about pests in your garden that are killing your food you're trying to grow?
You can't grow anything if bugs and other pests are eating all of your crops.
If you can't spray for the bugs on your crop.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
You're going to have to come up with some natural solutions or something. I don't know.
Which rarely work.
Which is sitting out in your yard with a fly swatter. No, you can't kill them.
But you can't kill them.
Shoo them away with the fly swatter.
Oh, wow.
I've got one of those bug zappers now. We just got one.
That'd be illegal. Criminal.
That would be illegal.
It's a great sound.
Mike, you're a murderer. You're a mosquito murderer. How
and
dare
flies.
You?
And moths.
You're terrible.
Yep, I'm a horrible person.
Oh, my goodness.
Could you imagine if somebody brought that up in Louisiana?
Or
the
Texas.
Sportsman's paradise.
Oh, Louisiana, you're right.
Run them out on a rail.
No more hunting and fishing.
No,
you would
more.
Be a criminal.
Could you see Toledo Bend?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I cannot stop laughing. I can't stop laughing. This we've gone past common sense and into the absurd, surreal. This can't be real.
It cannot be.
This people, what happened?
Protect the bugs.
Oh my gosh.
Save the geese. Whatever. Oh my God. I thought it was
no more.
I truly thought it was
slaughter.
Fake. I really thought it
I
was
did
fake.
Too.
And we did a deep dive, and it's not fake.
It's not.
They're going to put it on the ballot.
It's faux true.
Faux true is so sad.
we've been talking all morning. If you're just joining us, the incident that took place at the Uptown Bar in downtown Shreveport. Minors, 75 minors. Now, we say minors, and you think 14-year-olds. These were college.
They're adults.
Graduates and students.
Between the ages of 18 and 21.
And there was a graduation party, the owner's son.
Mm-hmm.
And had a bunch of friends over, but Tim Huck says, no, there's no permit that allows my underage in a bar,
The permit they've sent me looks like it's a street closure permit because they're wanting to close part of the street for this graduation party. This is not a permit to allow people under 20. And there's no age mentioned on this permit.
And how this all got started, Shreveport City Councilman Alan Jackson was at this club on that Saturday night, early Sunday morning.
Yep.
And got involved when officers got called because there were so many minors there. I say minors under 21. And Alan got involved. Maybe he just shouldn't have gotten involved.
Hear his candid story. I think he's being truthful. Coming up in less than 10 minutes.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Shreveport City Councilman Alan Jackson tells us what happened on that Saturday night, early Sunday morning at the Uptown Club with the miners involved and the Shreveport Police. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Seven FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. I don't even know what to think about this. Alan Jackson, Shreveport City Councilman on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. First of all, Alan, good morning. Thanks for talking with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
So let's go back to early Sunday morning. It's Saturday night, about 1 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, Uptown Bar in downtown Shreveport.
Not downtown, right?
Well, it's downtown.
Okay.
It's
It's a little
south. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Down Marshall Street. This was a graduation party. Is that what was? That's why there were 18 to 21 year olds there.
A college graduation party for his son. Yes.
Okay.
So the young people there
of which he had a permit.
He did have a permit. He followed the process.
Talking about the owner of the club.
Owner of the club received a permit. Everybody there was ID'd and given a wristband to identify those that were under the age of 21.
No one was under the age of 18, correct?
No one that I'm aware of. I believe everybody was considered an adult between 18 and 20 as far as underage.
Now,
these were college students. There were a lot of college students, a lot of his friends, a lot of people that he attended college with came down to celebrate with him for his graduation.
But then allegedly somebody called the police and said there are underage kids in this bar. Is that what happened?
Yes. So police came in. They was walking around with flashlights. The DJ asked, who are y'all looking for? Because they were a little aggressive. The DJ kept repeating, who are y'all looking for? I walked up to one of the officers. I identified who I was. And he said that we received a call saying there were underage people in this establishment. I said, okay. I said, the owner is in the back inside the food truck. He has a food truck inside the patio. And so I escorted the officers to the owner, and then I allowed them to talk, and I kind of stepped back and kind of gave them their space. Once they finished talking, the owner instructed the DJ to tell everybody who had a yellow gold bracelet that they had to leave. And so he complied. He did exactly what the officer instructed him to do. And then all of the yellow bracelet people were escorted out through the courtyard and then off of the premises.
And this was at around 1 o'clock in the morning.
This was about 1 o'clock in the morning.
So correct. They had been there all night then since earlier, because the club didn't open until 10 p.m. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So they had been there all night then.
And their party was in the patio area.
Their party was in the patio area, correct.
And it started raining, and that's why they came in. Is that accurate?
That's why they came in. And also, their event started well before 10 o'clock. They just, once 10 o'clock came, they didn't leave. I don't know if he was aware that they didn't leave. His normal club does not open up until 10 o'clock. It's a 10 to 2 club. So I'm not sure if he wasn't aware that they didn't leave, but they remained on the premises inside. When I arrived maybe around midnight. I was even unaware that there was a previous event. I was unaware that there were underage people at the time until the police arrived.
Was there alcohol out on the patio?
No. To my knowledge, nobody under the age was served alcohol. Hence, that's why they was giving a separate wristband. All of the bartenders understood going on. And so no bartenders, to my knowledge, served anybody that was under the age of 21.
Let's get to the problem here. Okay. You saw the officer writing a summons is what you told me yesterday. And I wrote it down. I saw the officer writing a summons. I asked if he had to write a summons. I asked if he could give a warning. I then asked if I could loop the chief in, and that's when you called Chief Smith, correct?
Correct. Everything was correct. I asked the officer for me to call Chief Smith, and I want to say that small detail. I'm the type of person that I'm never going to intervene or tell any body of authority what to do or how to do their job. So I made it clear that I asked the officer, I said, is it okay that we reach out to Chief Smith? And he said, yeah, go ahead. And so then I did call Chief Smith. Now, honestly, Aaron, I didn't expect Chief to answer. By this time, it's closer to 1:30 in the morning. So I did not expect Chief to answer. I expected him to be nice and tidy in his bed sleeping. But he didn't answer the phone. When he answered the phone, Of course, you know, I'm pretty sure my number is saved in his phone, but I still identified who I was to him. And I said, hey, Chief, we have a situation. I'm going to let the officer on the scene kind of explain to what's going on. Because I knew they had more in-depth knowledge than what I had. And so I didn't want Chief just taking it from me. I wanted him to hear directly from the officer. So I passed my phone to the officer and I allowed them to talk.
Okay, let me interrupt you right there because
to talk to the chief.
The police department has put out a statement saying the chief did not talk to the officer. You handed your phone to the officer. The chief was on the other end of the line, right?
That's correct.
So their statement is incorrect.
I have not seen their statement, so okay. I can't speak for that.
But do you know what the chief said to the officer?
I do not.
So the quotes of him saying, let it go, don't worry about it, you don't know anything about that?
No, because the chief was not on speakerphone, so the officer was talking to him directly. From my understanding, the officer was explaining to him what was going on.
And what happened after that? Did they issue a summons? Did they issue a warning? What happened?
After that, the officer indicated that they were going to issue a warning.
And that's what happened?
That's what happened.
A written warning?
I don't know if it was written or verbal. I didn't see any officers walk back into the building. I'm not sure who reached out to the bar owner, Mr. Williams. And almost let me say this also too. Mr. Williams did not ask me to I was literally getting ready to leave and I saw this taking place. And so I asked on my own. Mr. Williams was not standing beside me. He was in another part of the venue, again back on the patio, back into the food truck. At the time he had no idea any of this was going on.
Why did you get involved, Alan? Why did you interject yourself?
Great question. And I've been getting this question a lot. My position as a council person, if I'm able to help, I believe that's part of my job.
Help somebody who might be breaking the law?
Well, honestly, Aaron, I was there. I felt like, and I know Ryan Williams, I feel like he's a good business person. I didn't feel like he did anything. Honestly and transparent, I didn't know there was another event. I didn't know that he even had a permit. But reading comments on Facebook, these underage people did not sneak in. Nobody did not forget to check ID. It wasn't that he wasn't running his business well. This was an advertised event. He wanted those individuals there. He invited those individuals there. And they were wristbands. They were giving proper wristbands. I've experienced places in other parts of the country where 18 to 20 are allowed to party with 21 and up because they have laws that said this is a college town. And so I'm familiar with that. I felt like this was a one-time thing. I felt like this was because his son was graduating. This was not a routine thing. So given the circumstances, being on the scene at the time, and I'm saying I know Ryan. The officers there may not know him. They may not know his character. And so I wanted to let them know that, hey, this is a good guy. This is not something that happens. To my knowledge, his establishment has never been in trouble before as far as breaking or violating the law. And so I wanted to offer that. I wanted to ask for any type of courtesy or consideration, but I still respect the officer's decision. I still allow them to say, hey, we will consider that or not consider that. That's all I was asking.
Shreveport City Councilman Alan Jackson, looking back on it now, do you think maybe I could handle this differently? Do you regret calling the chief and getting him involved?
I would say yes, because in my politics, I can always handle any decisions that I make. I'm still supportive of the decision that I made, but I do not like getting other people involved. I do not like other people having to answer for any situation that I put them in. So I do apologize for putting Chief in a tight squeeze. In retrospect, I would have allowed just things just to kind of play out, and then just, you know, deal with them at a later date. I think that would have been the best move in retrospect. But in the moment, I walked up to the officer and I asked them to consider, you know, the facts. I asked them to, for me to, you know, I didn't ask them, but I was explaining who Ryan Williams is. And I believe that this is a one-time thing. I didn't feel like this would warrant a summons at this particular moment, because this bar does not have a habit of allowing underage people in it. It was a special event to honor his son's graduation.
Alan Jackson, Shreveport City Councilman, thank you for being candid with us. We sure appreciate it. There's a little discrepancy in your story and the chief's story, which we need to investigate. But we appreciate you telling your side of the story, and thanks for being candid.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
I don't even know what to say. I mean, I really don't. I don't even know what to say at this point.
We do need to correct something, because we did kind of go off on, because Chris Bordelon, the spokesman for the police department, is quoted on KTBS saying the chief never spoke to the officer at the scene. Alan Jackson says clearly the chief did. He got the chief on the phone, handed the phone to the officer, and the officer spoke. Chris Bordelon now tells me, when I'm quoting, yes, that's a misquote. He did not speak to the one who wrote the comment in the call.
But he spoke to the sergeant.
Yes.
On duty.
He spoke to the sergeant on duty. He says it was a 30-second conversation, and then it was going to be handled by the ABO office, and they later went out and wrote a citation. So it's a, you know, a lengthy statement from Sergeant Bordelon. Corporal, is he sergeant now? Corporal or sergeant?
I think he's still corporal.
Okay, Corporal Bordelon. Anyway, this just got way messier than it needed
to. It absolutely did.
And it's
crazy.
I've asked for the chief to come on. We don't know if that'll happen, but I have asked.
We'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM 7.